are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. Joining me today, you already know, it's Kevin Durso. How are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. We're sitting here Sunday morning, and we talked about it on last week's show, but we do not have a cup winner yet.
That's what I said. I kind of put it on the line. I thought I was going to be wrong for a little while
You were very close.
I was very close to being wrong, but yeah. I said we wouldn't have a winner yet by the time we got here this week.
And we certainly don't. The Dallas Stars won Game 5 in double overtime on Saturday night to bring the series to 3-2. Tampa could have had it. Tampa could have won the cup.
Tampa looked like they were going to win the cup.
Even late in the third period, you know, they're up 2-1 in the third period, fairly late, you know, and Joe Pavelski scores the tying goal and brings it right back, and they go to overtime, and then they go to another overtime. And then Corey Perry.
Yeah.
The entire Western Conference just went,
I know. A lot of people around the league probably did.
Yeah, but especially that Pacific Division.
Yeah.
He tortured all those teams for a long time.
And I mean, it is a credit to Jim Nill and Dallas for the two pickups that they made, the two guys who were veterans that everybody kind of looked at and went, are you sure?
Are you sure they're over the hill?
Right. Are you sure they're going to be big contributors to this team? And they're the two that kept your season alive.
I don't think people question Pavelski as much as Perry.
No, I don't think people question Pavelski as much.
Right.
I think people saw that as a role
injury time. And because Perry hadn't played for, what, a year and a half?
I don't know if it was that. It was just for a while. He didn't really, he hadn't played for a little while. And it was, I think the other thing about it was, is even when he was playing, you were seeing the trajectory of his career was just going downward fast. Yeah. He wasn't that guy anymore. It felt like.
You really see guys fall off the cliff, 34, 35, 36.
I mean, I don't know if you can find a better player on Dallas in this series than Pavelski. I mean, he's been outstanding.
He has been absolutely spectacular. I think he knows more than a lot of players on this Dallas team. He knows how close it is. And he knows more than anybody that this is probably as close as he's ever going to get.
Right.
Again. And this is his last chance. No one is trying harder than Joe Pavelski right now.
There was a great story, and I think it was Pierre LeBrun who had it. I don't remember exactly, so I'm taking a guess there. But it was that Joe Pavelski had it narrowed down to three teams in free agency, and one was Dallas and one was Tampa Bay. And literally he picked correctly among two of the final, like he had the final in his mind already with two of the teams that were going to be there for his shot to win.
How much better would Tampa have been with Joe Pavelski this year?
I would have been interesting to find it. I would have been interesting to know his role there though, because like, I feel like that's a deciding factor. Like Pavelski still fits in as a middle six center for them, for Dallas. Yeah. But for Tampa, like Sorelli took such a huge step. And, you know, at one point in time, you had Yanni Gourde playing on your fourth line. Like that's how deep Tampa is. I was thinking about this, like the thought was running through my mind probably after Game 4, but then also as Game 5 is going on too, because I'm sitting there going, you know what? Tampa Bay probably, and I'll echo this again next week, assuming that Tampa wins a series or whatever.
Which is definitively not certain at this point.
Oh, it's not certain at all. Especially, well, I mean, to me, the only reason I'm saying that assuming Tampa wins is because of the fact that they need one more and Dallas needs two. That's the only reason I'm saying
it. And it's hard to beat Tampa twice in three games. Like it's tough to do that, beat them three in a row, which is what Dallas is going to have to do to win.
Right. I mean, it would be remarkable if they came back from 3-1 to win this, but
Tampa's never lost more than two games in a row in the playoffs, though, right? So it's fine.
I don't think so.
And they definitely didn't lose four in a row in the first round last year.
This year, I don't think they actually have lost back to backs. I don't think at any point.
I don't think so either. No,
I think they've come in and they just cruised. I mean, pretty much from the beginning. And it was funny too, because I was thinking this last night. I tweeted it actually. It was lining up to be a fitting ending because Tampa's won every series with an overtime goal. Yeah. I mean, Braden Point had the one in the first series. And Braden Point's had a lot of big moments anyway. I mean, Braden Point had the 5-0
goal. Did Braden Point have another one?
He had the 5-0 goal.
Oh, right.
And then scored the winner against Columbus. Hedman had the one against Boston. And then Sorelli had the one against the Islanders.
Right.
And to be honest, if I had to make a guess – at that point in time, I thought about throwing a name. I was running out of like space in the tweet anyway to put a name in there. But in my mind, I had a name in mind because I'm going, point, Hedman, Sorelli, and I went, come on, who's got to score this goal? It's Kucherov.
It's got to be.
Kucherov's got to be, like, it's going to be somebody like that. It's got to be.
Speaking of big names on Tampa, do you want to touch on Stamkos for a second?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Yeah. Because there were a couple good points floating around and from Flyer land, as we like to say, or something like that. Yeah. Charlie O'Connor was tweeting during the game, too, and he even said, and made a great point, too. As soon as Stamkos was in the lineup for game three,
that's a win.
Tampa Bay was winning that game. Yep. Not even if he scores a goal. They were just winning that game because he's there. And then when he scored a goal, yep. Take lock that and, multiply it. It was as much of a lock as you could find. Right. Yeah. So they were off and running at that point in time. But like, it's the way you got to look at it. It was one game. You know, yes, he lifted them for that one game, and they were not losing game three at all, no matter how you spin it. But it was one game. And that's why game four was really interesting, because there were times during game four I thought Dallas was going to find a way to win that game. I'll touch a little bit on some of the talk that was going on, because obviously there were a couple of penalty calls that were a little questionable throughout. I mean, first of all, Tampa Bay could have won that game in overtime, 2 minutes into overtime, because there shouldn't have been a penalty called on Braden Point at the end of regulation. That's not embellishment. There's no way around it. Correct. It shouldn't have been a penalty. I also don't know that I would have called the penalty on Jamie Benn, because it is a battle. It is more of a hockey play than it is a trip. And it's, you know, especially in overtime plays, I think that's the thing that bothers people. It's not that is it a borderline trip? Sure it is. Because skates get tangled, and if he kicks a skate out, then sure, you have reason to possibly call a trip. But it's overtime of game four of the Stanley Cup final. You make that call, especially for what? You know, to make up for the fact that Tampa Bay or that Dallas already had a power play? Like, is that what it was?
Yeah, makeup calls are a problem in the league, and they have been for a very long time.
Yeah, like,
there are dozens of spreadsheets that show it.
Yeah, and as much as I don't mind, like, I don't think it influenced the result per se, because let's put it this way. Dallas had already given up two power play goals in the game, and I think that kind of tells you how good Tampa Bay's power play has been in the series.
Right. Turns out, like, Tampa is very good.
But this is where I was going with this. This is what I was thinking the other night. Like, as game four ends, game five's going on, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, because I watched game four with a group of friends, and I even said, you know, to me, Andrei Vasilevskiy is the best goalie in the game right now, for me. And I know I'm struggling to find a guy who I think will be as consistent as he has been for the last 3 years. Like, that's what I'm looking at.
I think Tuukka Rask has a conversation with you.
Rask does, like, but I'm wondering how much longer Rask has to reign, kind of like that thing. Like, Vasilevskiy is in his prime, a first round pick that had a lot of, you know, was highly touted coming into the league. It says something when, and I know we're not going to get too much into draft, but it says something when the one goalie that's in the draft that's first round potential is literally being called the next Vasilevskiy. Like, he's going to be the highest drafted goalie since Vasilevskiy.
Right.
And he's Russian. And like, literally the next Vasilevskiy.
For sure. Yeah. It's just one of those things that Tampa Bay has put together a very, very good
team. They have put together a very good, and see, that's where I was going with this. So I think Vasilevskiy is the best goalie in the game, and I think now it's getting harder and harder to argue against Victor Hedman being the best defenseman in the game right now. Like, I don't know if there's anybody better than Victor Hedman in the game right now. Again, consistently, like, I'm not taking anything. And this is another thing we can touch on throughout the show, is the awards that were announced on Monday of last week.
Definitely.
I get it. You know, he didn't win the Norris this year, but he is a Norris winner. And realistically, to me, like, I feel like this is another one of those guys that we're going to sit there and say, oh, if he just gets the cup win, then look at the credentials he has going forward. Like, he plays a ton of minutes. He's as durable as they get. And he's an incredibly talented offensive defenseman. Like, he plays both ends of the ice so well.
Right. And when people talk about Tampa, they list all the threats they have up front. They talk about Stamkos, which we touched on. He played a little bit in this series. We talked about Kucherov. We talk about, you know, these upcoming guys, Point and Sorelli, and, you know, even your Yanni Gourde. And then on defense, people go, yeah, and they have Victor Hedman. And kind of gloss over it after that. But he's that good. He's
exactly
good.
And imagine being a team like that, that can sit there and probably say, you know, arguably has the best goaltender and the best defenseman in the league.
Yep.
You know, take nothing against the forward group at all. Like, I'll get into them too, because I'm right. starting. Because
you're talking about the reigning Hart Trophy winning forward core, including Nikita Kucherov, right?
Right. And here's the thing. I know, like, Kucherov definitely deserves a lot of it, no question about it. But I think people have learned to focus on him. And I don't know if, like, look, it's hard to focus on one or the other when they're on that
tougher
top line.
For him, it's far tougher for him with Stamkos out.
Sure, exactly. Yeah, I think that a little bit. But because where I'm going with this is that as I'm watching this series, watching this whole playoffs, all that type of stuff, and I've watched him throughout the season too, like regular season games too. If he's not already, Braden Point is probably a top 10 player in this league, maybe going to be borderline top five when it's all said, like once he hits his prime. Like, he's that good.
I think that's supremely fair. I think he'll probably nitpick over the list.
I don't know if he's top five yet, but yes, he is in this conversation. Like, he's in conversation to be one of the best players in the game. And I think the second goal he scored in game four proves it. Like, you're that alert. You're that, your hand eye is that good. Your skill set is that good. He's insanely talented. And not only that, but he's shown that he's got the clutch gene. Like, yep. He scored in overtime a ton. Yep. And like, he's got all of those things going for him. Like, everything about him.
Tampa Bay could theoretically put Stamkos on the wing, right? Like the Flyers have done with Claude Giroux.
Yeah.
And have Stamkos point Kucherov as a top line. Is that that's better than Boston's top line, right?
It's best. It would be the best top line. You have league. To. And there are parts of me to think that even with Pilat on that line, it's one of the best top lines in the league, because Pilat is 10 times better with both of them, obviously. And Pilat turns into, I don't know if there's a good comparison for the Boston line, because he's not like this actually. But okay, so you know who Pilat kind of takes the role of to an extent?
Okay.
Pilat is the Michael Renberg of that line. Like, the guy who, on his own, he might not do it as well, but when you put him with two guys who are outstanding, you know, and score a lot and know how to find the net, then you're going to get a guy who consequently finds the net a lot too. And don't get me wrong, like, Pilat's goal in game five was outstanding.
I was personally a little bit of the opinion that, you know, anybody could have scored the goals that Michael Renberg scored, but I get it.
Yeah, okay, and Pilat's got a higher skill set, yes.
Right.
Like, that's what I'm not taking it away from him. He's got a high skill set.
Right. I like Michael Renberg, but he's a little blue collar for this conversation.
Well, and you know what, and I'm also comparing a line from a totally different era, but I'm just trying, I'm picking a guy on reputation is what I'm kind of trying to say with it, is like, Renberg was the lesser known member of the Legion of Doom. Like, everybody knew LeClair for the 50 goal seasons, and everybody knew Lindros because they could see a Hall of Fame player. Right. It's I think you see that too.
And
like,
a
I
Hall
think
of Fame head case.
Well, sure, but I think he's. I like Eric Lindros, and I definitely like the way he's been over the last several years. The way that relationship
for sure,
ended.
Definitely,
he's a good guy.
I appreciate the relationship he has with the Flyers these
But
days,
that is the sure. dynamic I get from Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov, is that here's two guys, both can score a good size number of goals. They might not be a 50 goal scorer, but they can score a decent number of goals. They're both point guys.
They might also just both be 50 goal scorers, honestly.
Well, they could, you know, well, they could, but at the same time, like, one of the things I think when it comes to that team and the construction of that team is they've built it in such a way that those guys don't have to be out there all the time. I mean,
right.
Victor Hedman had to put in a shift last night of 3 minutes and 2 seconds at one point in time because he's an animal. You know, I mean, he's what you want every up-and-coming defenseman to be like, probably. Like, I mean, when we talk about Ivan Provorov and say the guy's a warrior, he's an animal.
I was about to ask you, who would you rather have for the next 3 to 5 years, Victor Hedman or Ivan Provorov?
Well, Hedman.
Okay.
And obviously,
beyond that, it's going to be Ivan Provorov, just because Victor Hedman will fall off eventually. But okay,
well sure, but I don't see Hedman falling off that much, and you know, it amazes me.
Sure, but at
me.
A certain point, your body, you know what I mean, your body just fails you.
It amazes me, and I again, this is something I was starting to think about, because what I tend to do writing wise when it comes to the Stanley Cup Finals is I'll just track the whole series, and then when it's over, the next day I'll write something that's supposed to kind of broadly spectrum it and tie it back to the Flyers in some way.
Right.
Like, last year, the answer was, look at what Jordan Binnington just did. That's the piece. You need the goalie, and the rest will fall into place if you get the goalie. Right. And and taking that small sample size we had from year first half, like the first half of a year of a career of Carter Hart, we went, he's showing signs of it. Now I want to see it. But it, like that could be the piece. Like that might just be the one piece you need. And if you can get good goaltending, especially from a guy who, you know, just jumps into the role and runs with it, which we expected Carter Hart to do.
And he certainly did.
Then you've got a big piece of it. The thing that I'm going to look at with Tampa, probably assuming Tampa wins, will be the draft structure, the finds that they had and the way they built it, mainly homegrown, because I counted the number of players. And let's just say, I even did it a little bit of a wrong, kind of a wrong way of doing it, because I counted just drafted players.
Okay.
Drafted players, I think I got to 10, which is half of the skating roster to begin
with. Pretty
good. Then I forgot about or didn't add in two undrafted free agents that made it.
Okay.
Like that are fines by their team as well that were developed. So 12 pieces of this team are
more than
probably
half the active roster.
Right. And then you do, like, there's no question about it. Do you need to go out and try to get a Shattenkirk? Sure you do. Like,
yeah.
That helps bring it all together. Is it good to go out at the trade deadline and make cost-effective moves that bring in Blake Coleman or Barclay Goodrow or like guys like that, because they do fill a role? Ryan McDonough has been there for a little longer. That's only reason. Like,
but
so
even
he's
so,
actually,
he was,
you know,
he was, they kind of picked him up at the opening of their window. He was kind of their first, okay, we're going for it piece.
There was, and there was a point in time, because I mean, they've done this a lot. Like, Tampa had, at one point in time, Tampa had Dan Girardi. Like, they've gone through that system, you know,
they've had a lot of former Rangers defensemen. Yeah. I mean,
there are a lot of former Ranger defensemen kind of just going around from place to place.
Kidding.
I mean, yeah, I mean, literally yesterday, you know, I mean, that was another one, but they haven't built this thing through free agent. I mean, and when I'm talking about homegrown too, I mean, I'm going back to Stamkos. I'm going back to, it starts there, and, you know, and Stamkos was a number one pick, first overall, and Hedman was a number two. So it's not like these guys aren't, you know, came in out of nowhere. But every team in the league, presumably, I don't remember the exact structure of the draft. I'm not going to try to.
Yeah, I know.
But every team in the league, presumably, passed on Braden Point twice.
Yep.
And some did three times.
Right. You hear about the, you know, the DeBrincat effect, right?
That's well, and here's, and biggest, I mean, here's, and here's, name. Well, and here's one of the best ones of them all. I mean, Andre Palat was a seventh round pick.
That's a good
one. I saw an article the other day that was titled, like, is this the best seventh round pick of all time? Like, it might be. Like, how many times do you hit on a seventh round pick? I mean, Lundqvist was a six, I think.
Right. Now you talk about homegrown talent, and going across the aisle to the Dallas Stars, they do have some of that.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, well, and Jamie Benn is one of them, obviously. Yeah. Ben's been there his entire career. Radulov's kind of one, too. I mean, Radulov was playing with Montreal for a while, but they kind of picked him up early and still took him as a – he's been there for more years than people think.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
But I think he got there at, like, 27 or 28, though. So I don't know. It might be kind of hard to call him homegrown.
Okay. Klingberg's been there forever.
Yeah. Sagan's been there forever, but he's not quite homegrown.
Sagan was already a name, though, by the time he got there. The Boston years developed him.
But at this point, he's been there for almost a decade.
And, I mean, look, obviously, as I'm looking down their roster right now, like, there's enough guys, like, who are young, developed talent.
Right, exactly. You think about how much of it is youth, right? Klingberg hasn't had a chance to play anywhere else. Esa Lindell hasn't had a chance to play anywhere else.
Klingberg's had more of a chance. I mean, Klingberg's 28, so I give him a little bit more. Like, I'm talking about Heiskanen. I'm talking about Kivi Ranta, who come from out of nowhere, right?
Right.
But Gurianov also being a first-round pick, you know, like those are the guys I'm thinking of, I'm sure, you know.
Right, they definitely have some of it, but I think Dallas, more so than Tampa, is a team that's here kind of because of their pickups, right? Because they got Pavelski,
Perry. Like,
you know, even going out and getting Khudobin a couple of years ago to be their backup, you know, is turning out to be a phenomenal decision, because Anton Khudobin might be the Conn Smythe winner if Dallas wins this. Here.
Well, I mean, even if he wasn't, like, presumably Ben Bishop would be the guy in, you know, like
Tampa Bay Lightning member.
Right. But then again, that's another acquisition. I mean, do they have a goalie in waiting? Sure. Like, Ottinger's one of their first round picks.
Yeah, he's the guy for the future for sure.
Yeah. I'm looking at their roster right now. And which happens to Hockey Reference is great, because it does have the draft information listed there too.
Yeah.
So Jamie Benn was, and by the way, Jamie Benn was a fifth round pick in
07. I was going to say, we're talking about late round picks on Tampa side, and Dallas has a couple of them themselves. You know, Jamie Benn is a stud of a steal.
Okay, now here's an interesting one, so to speak, because he just got thrown into, I think game four was when he had to play finally, because I forget who was out, but somebody else was out. Like Dallas has lost a lot of their penalty killers. Like Fax has been out. And then, I mean, at one point, Dickinson almost didn't play in game five. I know that. And then they almost lost. Then they almost lost Sekera too. So, Rupe Hintz has been out for a while. Who's the other one who they lost? There was no Blake Como's been out for a little too. So they've lost a couple of them. But Nick Camano was a recent draft pick. So he came in. Dickinson was a first round pick for Dallas.
Right.
Faxa was a first round pick. Gurianov was a first round pick.
A lot of these guys are homegrown.
Let's see here. Now, Rupe Hintz was a second round pick.
Yep.
Wow, I didn't know this one. Klingberg was also a fifth.
I knew Klingberg was late. I didn't know quite how late, but I knew he wasn't a top prospect coming out of the draft.
Esselindel is also homegrown. That's a 2012 third. Believe it or not, and I don't believe he's played his entire career there. Like, I think in a roundabout way, it's worked out. But Jamie Oleksiak was a first round pick for Dallas, and then obviously had those years.
He's been
Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh a couple different times.
Well, he's been in Dallas a couple different times. He started his career in Dallas, went to Pittsburgh for two seasons, and came back. So
right. That's
kind of an interesting one.
Right. He fought Zdeno Chara somewhere along the way.
And then I got Jason Robertson, who was a second round pick in 17.
Yeah, they have a lot of homegrown talent.
They do have a lot of homegrown talent, but then you do start to look at some of the other names, and like even down to like, yes, we can talk about how Seguin was acquired over the years, Radulov was acquired over the years, things like that. And obviously we've already talked about the Perry Pavelski additions, but think about a guy like Andre Sekera.
Yeah.
Who just comes in and is expected to fill a veteran defenseman role and does it pretty well for them. You know, like a guy like that. I don't know. And I'm also going off of strictly draft information. Like I'm not going off of, hey, they were traded during their prospect years.
Right.
But Matthias Janmark is another good one because he was a Detroit draft pick.
Okay.
And has really come into his own in his role with Dallas.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. But either way, I think both teams have kind of shown you the model, right? Like you have to have a good system. You have to. You know, we saw
it
at
St.
Louis last year. We saw it, you know, maybe a little less so out of Washington the year before that. But like, for the most part, the blueprint is becoming clear. If you want to be a top team in the NHL, you have to have a good system.
Well, now more than ever, and I think the flat cap has a lot to do with that too, because you're going to see teams who are going to make decisions when it comes to this offseason and find a way to bridge the gap of these years with the flat cap by picking guys to come into the lineup who are draft picks, who are prospects, who aren't on big deals. And that's, you know, you'll see a lot of that.
ELCs are a valuable commodity.
Sure they are. Yeah. At this point. And I mean, without trying to make this too much about the Flyers to an extent, but like, look at the number of guys who they have, who they've locked up, and you go, well, whenever you decide to start that clock, go ahead and start it. Right. But you know, like this is where having Wade Allison and Tanner Leshinsky locked up is going to be a value.
Going
to
be huge.
You can start, you can start their time whenever you decide to. Now, granted, the hard part of this is when do you decide to start that timer, because you'd like to see them play professionally. And well, what other league is going to return professionally in the near future other than the NHL, which is, and even to say, call that near future, like quite honestly, what's more likely at this point? You know, is it more likely that somehow or other there's hockey again before Christmas, or that we're talking about the next season being 2021 already? You know, like that's the thing. Like if that's the way it goes, then where are they going to end up? And how are you going to keep them conditioned and ready, especially for how long they've been off, because they were both college players? I mean, the college season kind of just went and disappeared, and that was it. Like, because it's an interesting draft year too. Because in some cases, you've got guys who played a decent amount, had their season canceled, and are now coming back a little bit. Like, there's Quebec Major Junior Hockey League games getting ready to go on.
Yep.
And I'm hearing stuff about other prospects who are playing, you know, overseas. Like, there's guys overseas that are playing that are gonna, you know,
right? European leagues are getting ready to run.
I hopped on a call, media call that had some of the top prospects on it for a little while. And the first guy they brought on was Tim Stützle, who is the German prospect,
who's projected to go top 10 for certain.
Oh, top five, I would imagine. I think he's gonna go
top 10 for certain.
He's the number one ranked international player in in the draft?
I think after Lafreniere, there's enough. Two through five or six are close enough that I think there's a chance he slips to six. So he's top 10 for sure, but he might very well be
there's
top five.
Two, and we'll talk a whole lot about this later because I've already gone through like one. Yeah, I did this week. I did do that part of it where I got the guides. I'm ready to go. And
we'll do a little bit of a draft preview next
there,
week.
There are two clear-cut defensemen at the top of the board that are top 10 worthy. And there are a lot, there's a lot of forwards. It's a good.
I think Jamie Drysdale is going to be a very good NHL player.
Jamie Drysdale is going to be good. And here's the thing. He might not be the best defenseman in the draft.
I agree.
Because the name I see keep rising higher and higher is Jake Sanderson.
Yeah.
He just keeps getting higher and higher. And I think he might go top five. To be honest.
I don't know how many of our listeners are prospect people. But man, if you're a prospect person, you're excited for the top 25 picks or so in this year's draft. It is a very good draft for the, you know, most of the first round.
Well, and here's the thing too, because there are people who are going to say it's not a deep draft, and I'm not saying that's wrong. But
it's not a particularly deep draft. Hard thing about that first round.
But the hard thing about saying it's not a deep draft is not having something else to base it up. Like if a season ends and players show up at the biggest time of their junior careers in the Memorial Cup or whatever.
World juniors or.
Like, yeah. Like I'm hearing things about, oh, guess what? Like in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, this kid showed up. He's now, instead of what it was listed at, he's now 6 foot and
right.
200
pounds.
He's
taller and 30 pounds heavier.
Right. And now all of a sudden looks like he's even more fit for this. Like, oh, that could increase his stock last minute. You know, like
that's the amazing thing about evaluating players while they're going through puberty is that your scouting report can change because of hormones.
But we'll talk so much more about the draft next week and obviously talk about it from a Flyer standpoint because we know where the pick is. We know right. It's the 23rd pick, what they decide to do, all that stuff.
Jordan.
I will say right away, I wouldn't take a defenseman because after the two that we've already mentioned, there's a quite a big drop off.
Yeah. And also just looking at the Flyer system, and again, we're not getting crazy in depth with it. The Flyers have a little bit of a logjam. They don't really need to draft first round defenseman at this point.
No, I don't know exactly. I don't think they need to draft first round defenseman. I think second or third, you could use it. Yeah, absolutely.
But I think you're picking premium. You're using premium picks on somebody who can score goals.
Because you're getting a logjam at center too. Like you've got a lot of natural centers.
The nice thing is though, centers having too many centers is the best problem to have.
Sure.
If you don't have enough centers, who's taking your draws? If you have enough centers, hey, Scott Laughton, you're playing wing.
Oh, sure. No, and I'm not trying to downplay that, but I'm saying they've got a lot of those guys already at that level, and then right. They've drafted some of them nicely too. I mean, they've drafted a lot of guys who I consider hybrid forwards that can right. play both.
Well, right. And
we've
also talked about the new NHL in terms of faceoff violations, and having two mm-hmm. guys on a line who can take draws is supremely valuable.
Sure. To me, what I like in this draft to an extent is that the year, like it's the year they drafted Joel Farabee, you know, the okay. year they drafted Joel Farabee and they had two picks. Don't get me wrong. Like, so like they had two first
where's
round
Jay
picks.
Where's Jay O'Brien at, by the way? Have we heard from him recently?
Well,
the other first round pick that year?
He had a transfer issue because he transferred out of whatever college he was playing. And I think it was Providence.
Right.
And he wants to go to BU.
Okay.
But in order to do it, he had to literally take a year off from college. He played
in NCAA is garbage.
So it depends on how long you're going to stick with it, because I don't think it's garbage for someone like Cam York. But
I'm talking about the organization. The National Collegiate Athletic Association is a garbage organization.
Okay.
That's just my opinion.
But nonetheless.
In case you guys couldn't tell, we're not sponsored.
Yeah. But I do feel like it's more of a winger, like, to an extent, a winger draft. Like you can get a good natural winger in this draft.
Yes.
I'm saving this for next week, but there are a few that stand out in my mind that I like.
I like that tease. We'll definitely save that for next week.
Some of them with former NHLer ties. I'll tease it with that too, because there's a couple of them. There are last names that you're going to recognize.
Yeah. And I think it's funny that hockey is trending in that direction, but like, think about how expensive it is to play hockey, and it makes sure. sense that former pros kids are the ones who are playing well, and getting ice
and they get the
time
best and, trainers and right. they get the and best like here's my instructor and you know like
hey my dad's playing in the NHL. I had a session with the head coach the other day. Oh, you're five? Oh, okay. Here's a training session with an NHL head coach. Here you go.
Exactly. But it is, I mean, and like I said, I don't want to take away from the centers of the draft either, because there are good centers out there. And I don't think you could go wrong. at 23 with either side.
I think that Lafreniere kid might slip. I think the Flyers should take him at 23.
I don't think about that. But he's, I will say one of the things from his media availability, he's not assuming. Like, he's very unassuming of it being a sure thing.
I think he knows, because every year there's the guy. And then every year there's, oh, well, what if this is the guy, though? You know, and the Flyers year, it was, well, what if Nico Hischier is the guy? And then he ended up going. You know, what if, oh, yeah, what if Patrick Laine is the guy? Should the Leafs take Patrick Laine over Austin Matthews at number one? Ooh. Like, no, they shouldn't. No.
Yeah.
And that's never the answer. The Rangers should take Alexis Lafreniere. I, as a Philadelphia Flyers fan, as a fan of a division rival, I will be thrilled if the Rangers do not take him.
Well, sure.
Like, thrilled. I will be happier than whoever the Flyers take at 23. I will be happier if the Rangers don't take Lafreniere at one. will be the best possible scenario in this draft.
I mean, look, everybody, just about everybody in the first round gets somebody who's worth talking about anymore. Absolutely. Like, it feels like every year we're playing that game. To me, I worry less about, oh yeah, they're getting this guy or that guy in the first round, because everybody gets good players and everybody's got to find. And the other thing about it is that everybody's got to find a way to keep them.
Yeah.
Later on, like that. That's here.
We see Toronto running into trouble with that.
Right. Yeah. It's, for me, it's what team ends up having the fines that you sit there and you go, like it's the way we, like you mentioned,
we talked DeBrincat, about the Cup Finals.
It's, like, but you mentioned DeBrincat. Like, we play that game all the time because we're sitting there going, he was there. And why did everybody pass on him? And now Chicago's got him.
Right. Well, everybody passed on him. Right.
Well, everybody
including
did.
Including Chicago. Before they took him, they passed on him.
Everybody did. But I think the Flyers traded up that year, and everybody thought that's what they were trading up for was, hey, a guy who scored 40, 50 goals and, you know, whatever it was. And
was that Konechny? Was that
that year? No, that was a different year, I think. I hate to say who I think they actually took in ahead of him, because it's not playing out well. I think that was the year they – I think it was the year they drafted Carter Hart.
Okay.
But they didn't – but in trading up, they also
– right.
But they traded up – the guy they traded up for, or the guy that they had the pick – or that they had a pick for in front of DeBrincat, was Pascal LaBerge.
Oof, that's a swing and a miss from old Ronnie boy.
Because I think that year – I mean, because that year, Carter Hart was clearly the gem. But
yeah,
I think that was the year. Yeah. I think that was the year of Rubsov, and
not the best draft on earth when you have Alex DeBrincat going in the second round.
I mean, he's hit on a lot of other good first round picks,
plenty.
And I would say that probably one of the best things that Hextall did was also, you know, down the road will be the signing of Phil Myers.
Phil Myers, right? I was about to mention.
Like, well, and not only that, but I believe that, if I'm not mistaken, because I don't think it was. He was in the system already when Fletcher took over. So I think Zamula is another one who they'll say was a find as an undrafted free agent.
I believe he was a signing. Yeah.
Under that Hextall. Was during Hextall's time. Yep. So yeah, exactly. So like, I think that's another one too.
And those are two guys that could both end up contributing. Well, I mean, Phil Myers obviously is, but Igor Zamula could very well end up contributing at the NHL level himself.
Phil Myers has a pretty darn big playoff.
That's
goal
why already, I, right. You know. Phil Myers could very possibly be a top pair guy in the future.
The fact that he scored that goal in overtime too is what has me so excited for him, is that he played well enough over it. And I don't want to downplay, like, I know that their second round series, that Sanheim Myers pairing was not good. One of them wasn't good, or both of them weren't good in the same game.
They got exposed a little bit.
But like, I get it. They're young, and talk about an unusual situation to try to come back and start playing at such a high level. You know, yes, you found it a little early, but maybe you found it a little early because the team you were playing against, you know, wasn't quite there.
Right. And you did it at a time when you were, you know, getting ready to come back to training camp. Oh, actually, you're playing high stakes playoff games. Good luck.
Exactly.
It's tough for anyone to deal with, especially when you talk about guys. Sanheim's only playoff experience is the series against Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, before all of this, yeah.
You know, I talked on this show about Travis Konechny getting a little bit of a pass from me about his performance, because his only previous experience was that series against Pittsburgh. And I'm willing to extend Sanheim the same courtesy. You know, he gets a little bit of you haven't really been here before. And obviously this is Myers' first time in the playoffs, so
right.
You know, he has that excuse built in. No, going back to circling back on the draft, yeah, I don't think you can look at the Flyers' defensive core and look at Ivan Provorov, Travis Sanheim, Phil Myers, Robert Hagg. Look at all of the talent the Flyers have on defense and say, yeah, we should draft a defenseman. especially when you have Cam York in the system. Igor Zamula is coming up. You know, we have a couple of guys who are kind of floating around. Adam Ginning is still floating around Germany somewhere. You know, the Flyers have enough prospects in the system that taking a defenseman in the first round is probably not the play here.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't do it in the first round. I think, you know, because Mason Milman was a guy they drafted last year who people think is going to creep into that conversation in the years to come. And that's a fair assessment. I'm not saying that that's anything wrong with that, but like, you'll need another guy. Like, if York and Zamula are the guys that are coming and you have a bunch of others that are there, and chances are you won't be able to keep all of them. Like, let's just like Shane Gostisbehere is part of that drafted homegrown defensive core, but he's also got a contract that people would like to move probably.
Right. And also, you know, he had potential. He could have been involved in any number of conversations we had today, because he was also a little bit of a later round pick.
Yeah, he was a third, and that's, you know, you got to find somebody somewhere down the line. And maybe you do take on a guy like that too, a guy who probably is going to be a bit of a project. In terms of, like, you know, yeah, he's not going to be the best defensive guy, but he's got such a good skill set. Or the other way around. You take a guy who is good defensively and you go, all right, you know what? I know the guy's not going to light the world on fire offensively, but I don't care.
But you got a little time to work on him. And yeah. But it's also interesting that this draft has kind of been talked about as 20 to 25 prospects deep.
Yeah.
And the Flyers are sitting right at 23. So I think one of the big storylines, and obviously, again, we will talk about it next week, is who slips. Does anybody in the top 20 take somebody off the beaten track, you know, and the Flyers get somebody a little bit better who falls down to them? You know, do the Flyers get somebody in that, you know, that top bunch,
right,
as it were?
And I tried to be, because one of the things I'm going to do when I write about some of the prospects going in is I try to be careful about it, because I don't want to, like, let's put it this way. We can joke about it. It's funny on here because we're talking and people can hear us actually say it this way. But, like, I'm not going to include Alexis Lafreniere on my draft prospects profile list because he's not going to be there.
It's unreasonable. It's unreasonable.
Like, he's not going to be there. I'm not going to include Stutzel. I'm not going to include Quentin Byfield. They're going to be gone. There's a couple others that I have marked down too, like Cole Perfetti is going to be gone.
But honestly, in the top 10. Anybody in the 15 range?
I could took any,
be there.
I literally looked at any forward just about who was maybe 12 to 13 and then back.
Right.
And I did it based off of, okay, here's this ranking, here's this ranking, here's this ranking. Like, let's do rankings from four different places.
Right.
How do they have them ranked? And then go, because like there's one of them that I have where I go, okay, here's a guy who one list ranked seventh.
Yep.
Seventh overall. But on another list, that same guy is 11th, or like, I'm trying to see if I can find him on another one because he's got to be on this somewhere. Here's one where he's 12.
Yep.
And here's one where he's 13. And I go,
the crazy thing is the tiers in the NHL draft. It's all about, and I also think there's potential that this is the most insane draft ever in terms of transactions.
Right.
Because everyone is scrambling in a world where the cap is about to stay flat for 3 years. And I think there's going to be, maybe not necessarily the Flyers, but I think there's going to be so much moving and shaking. It's going to be hard to make any definitive statements about the draft before the draft. Because I think everything is up for grabs. I would love, max chaos, it's not going to happen. I would love for Ottawa to call New York and say, hey, we'll give you both of our top five picks. We would like number one, please. Because how much fun would that be?
Well, and stranger things have happened, especially in a year when the cap's flat and you may want that guy who can jump in. Yeah, I for sure. Yeah, that's how I do my system anyways. That I'm going to be realistic about it, but I'm going to give you names that
for sure
might be there and might not. And let's put it this way. There's a lot of mixed things. Like like I said, I pulled probably about three or four names that I like just among wingers. Not even among centers. And there's a handful of centers, because I even said there's two other guys who I think are listed more as centers that I like too, that I would be willing to go with. Two or three, actually. And collectively, like, I sit there and I go, okay, if you can tell me that any of those seven are going to be there at 23, maybe two or three of them even,
right,
I'd be happy to take any one of them and give it a shot.
Great.
You know, that's like, awesome. Honestly. Like, yeah. And I know, like, don't get me wrong. I know that there's, like, and I'll do the research on it as I go through, and I'll look at the guy's stat line.
And like I said, next week's show will be a little bit of a draft preview.
Sure. And when I see the stat line on a guy and go, okay, who's like, let's make a comparison. You're going to go, who's this year's Cole Caulfield? Who's this year's guy who has the outrageous scoring number and scores a ton of goals at what level? Right. And I don't
know if
I'm
the guy I want.
Well, and that's a guy a lot of Flyers fans want. And here's the thing, but here's where I'm going to try to go with it. I don't want everything to be numbers based per se, because there's people out there who don't score in bunches who are playing at a more competitive league. Like,
yeah, that's fair.
Like there are two.
If you're playing in the KHL, there's two. If you're playing in the KHL, your numbers are going to be a little worse than if you're playing in the WHL.
Right. And I believe there's two guys on this list out of the seven that I like that are playing against professional players. Against
men. Okay.
Right. That are not going to have the best scoring numbers, but at the same time are going to have something that stands out to me that goes more ready than you think.
It's not uncommon to look at a Finnish player who's playing in their top league and he's got 9 points in 46 games, but he's a great prospect because he's playing with men.
Right.
That's not supremely uncommon, right? He's playing with 30-year-old men and he's 17.
And you need to go back and look at what he did last time he played with 18-year-olds.
Right. How did he do when he was playing with peers? Right. How did he do it when he was playing against people who were as developed as he was and as mature as he was?
Well, and not only that, but and I don't think there's any surprise here, because it's becoming this kind of league anywhere. It continues to be this kind of league. There's a healthy international dosage here.
Yes.
And because of that, like, there are guys out here who last, and it sounds ridiculous to talk about it this way, but it's the only way we can, because it's the way the year has gone, that last December playing in World Juniors.
Right.
And you might know who they are because of the fact that they were playing in World Juniors at some point. I mean, like, as 17 or 18 year olds.
Some people put a lot of stock into that tournament.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And they should. And I don't want to discount anybody who played on the on the Canadian side or on the other. But that's also a great peer measurement for a guy who plays in the Finnish league or in the Swedish league or the German league.
Right. That's when everyone's on the same stage.
Yeah. Who you go, oh, he plays with 25 year olds every night, typically. Right. But when he played again in the under 18 World Junior or under 20 World Junior Championship, all of a sudden scored 7 goals or had 10 points in 6 games because he played with his peers.
It's like taking the donut off the baseball bat.
A little bit, yeah.
You take your warm-up swings with the donut on the bat so that when you take it off, you're a little quicker. You know, he's going from playing amongst every single person on the ice is 6'2".
Yeah,
20, and now he's going and playing against 17 and 18 year old kids who aren't done growing yet. You know, it's a whole different animal.
Sure, one of the things I did is I highlighted several different names down. I tried to find some common ground between names that were in the same ranking area, and those are some of the ones that I will be willing to share with next week with everybody and go over a couple of them, because there's some guys on the list that I'm becoming a fan of just by reading some stuff about them. And obviously there's guys who are work in progress, but that's the way it's supposed to be at this age too. Like, and especially as late as the Flyers are picking. This is not the Flyers picking in the teens anymore.
Right. This isn't the Flyers getting, you know, whoever slipped out of the top 10 at 12 or whatever.
Well, and not only that, but like, I also look at it from a standpoint of this too. When the Flyers picked Joel Farabee and then he makes the NHL 18 months later.
That was astonishing.
It's astonishing, but at the same time, you sit there and you go, you know what? Something about that makes a little bit of sense. You were a 14th overall pick, and
he should be good.
And you've amounted to that level that quickly.
Right.
You know, like, and I'm not sitting here like he didn't come in and shock the world and go all of a sudden be 20 goal scorer NHLer that quickly, but
a solid contributor immediately.
But I will take in his rookie year, I will take his 8 goals in 40 something games or whatever he ended up playing when it was all said and done regular season wise.
And the flash of the potential of he had so much more in him, and we all saw it.
And the playoffs, he looked pretty decent too. I mean, he has room to grow, but he looked good.
Right.
And you expected, like, even down to go back in years past, you expected when Ivan Provorov got taken 7th overall and expected when Travis Konecny kind of slipped to 24.
Right.
That they were two players who were going to wow you sooner than later and be up in that picture. You know, it took a while longer for someone like Travis Sanheim. He was drafted in 14. Drafted in, I don't remember what the exact pick was. I think it was 19 or 18.
Yeah,
or
mid to late round. Yeah.
But he was a first round pick, but he also took some time to grow into that role.
Yeah, he spent some time, and when he did.
Yeah. You know, but it's those guys. It's those first round forwards are typically more ready than most people are. Right. And if you grab a good first round forward, you know, and I'm not trying, you know,
that's like, why they're first round picks.
Well, right. And see, this is the thing too. Like you have to, their path is also a big part of it. Because right. if you're a junior player, it's much easier as a junior player to just sit there and go, all right, sure, I'm done. I'll jump right into the NHL because
I'm going to get drafted.
Right. Well, it's known for that. Like,
right.
As soon as you do it, like what the Flyers did last year, when you draft a college kid like Cam York, you are committing to the fact that for the next 2 to 3 years, you're probably playing without him because he hasn't even played his freshman year of college yet. So right. you're waiting for him to get to that point, play his freshman year, play his sophomore year, maybe even play his junior year. And sometimes that's around the time when they go, all right, I've played 3 years. It's not as likely.
A good example of this is the Florida Panthers. Last year, they drafted Spencer Knight, I think 13th overall, very mm-hmm. high, first half of the first round. And then about a week and a half later, they signed Sergei Bobrovsky for 7 years because they know Spencer Knight was going to college. And they know right. Spencer Knight for the next 3 or 4 years is not going to be challenging Sergei Bobrovsky. But when he comes out of college in 4 years, they will expect him to be ready or almost ready to take over from Sergei Bobrovsky. That's college is almost being used as an extended AHL. It's a little bit
as
a finishing system.
Well, and they know too. The other thing that they know is that he could play 3 years there, 4 years there, whatever he decides to do at the college level.
And he's been spectacular, by the way.
Well, and then he has to go on, and most goalies in their development to get to the NHL would have to go through the steps. Maybe even not AHL, but ECHL.
Maybe.
Like you may start three levels down and then go, okay,
you know what? As a first round pick after you've completed 4 years of NCAA hockey,
if he plays four, then he'll go straight to the
probably AHL. Not going to the ECHL, but it definitely exists that is a possibility.
I'm thinking that more if he stops after his sophomore year or maybe his junior year. Yeah, if he plays all four,
yeah, he would almost definitely step into the AHL.
Yeah,
if Florida even retains his rights at that point, but that's a whole different.
But he's going to have to go there. Like, I don't know too many goalies that come from a college development program and go straight into the NHL. It's always a progression.
Sure.
And a guy like that is probably going to play more consistently in the minor leagues than he would in the NHL until he's about 24 or 25.
Right, which works out really well for them because, again, that's kind of timing up to when the Sergei Bobrovsky contract runs out. They have themselves set up to really have a good tandem for a couple of years while Knight is still on his ELC.
Sure. And that's,
so you're not worried about paying Bobrovsky.
And that's the thing about goalies. Like, we're a little bit spoiled here right now because of the fact that Carter Hart is 22 years old.
Isn't that exciting?
I mean, now, and granted, the other thing about him, though, is that it's the product of the CHL. It's the product of that junior league being very competitive, and then not only being competitive, but putting you in a spot where if you go and play in that tournament, if you go and play in World Juniors, and you get to play on the same level as the best in that age range from around the world on their collective, like you're playing with Canada's all-stars against the U.S.'s all-stars, against Finland's all-stars, against Russia's all-stars, against, you know, you name it.
And even that, Carter Hart went back to Everett, what, twice after he was drafted? Like
he played 3 years there, yeah.
Yeah, he did not.
Well, probably more than that because he was playing there in his draft, like when he was drafted, so he had a good draft
I think
year.
He played there draft plus one and draft plus two.
Because both years he was, I think both years he was CHL goalie of the year.
Right. So even, you know, it's crazy how there's that top tier, right? Your top 10, 15, 20, who will step into the NHL right away. And almost everybody else still uses this development path. You know, it's 2 more years in the CHL, a couple years in the A. You know, that's just kind of how hockey works. It's crazy how it's ended up here.
The CHL is unique in that aspect, though, where you can sign that guy. Like when the Flyers drafted him, and signed him quickly. So it's like, we know we've got you. We don't care. And we'll let it take as long as it needs to for it to work out because there's no penalty. We've signed you, and the contract starts whenever we decide you're an NHLer.
It's a little more sketchy when you sign the European kid and then he goes, yeah, I'm just going to go back to my team for a couple of years. I'll be back. Don't worry. Sometimes that guy just doesn't come back.
Yeah. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse because you get more time to sign him, but you also have more time for him to think about whether he wants to play there or not.
You have more time for him to really, really like his KHL coach and not want to leave.
Right.
Which you hear stories of all the time, right? The Islanders are still trying to get Ilya Sorokin to come over. You know, they've been desperately trying for a couple
of years. I think they got him to come over, though.
Did they? Oh, yeah. They did finally.
Yeah, okay. Nothing started this year because they wouldn't let that happen. They wouldn't let guys just start their contracts.
But they finally got him.
But from what I understand, too, while he was not officially on the roster or anything like that, he was able to work out with them at times, too. And they said he's impressive. So
yeah,
they did convince him to come over.
They were pushing really hard. But so we teased that a little bit. But next week appears like we're going to do a little bit of a draft preview. We're going to talk about who the Flyers are going to take at 23. Do they trade up? Do they trade down? Are there other transactions that might be made? And we will talk about that next week, in addition to whatever else comes up. We'll talk about who won the Stanley Cup. We'll probably have a little bit of a conversation about the future of the show. And other than that,
want to talk a little bit about the awards?
Yeah. We'll hit awards real quick for sure.
Cause there was a couple, I mean, I didn't disagree with a lot of stuff at all. Like, I think the winners were all fine. It was there's names that pop up in the voting that just baffle me.
Oh, we'll run through the winners real quick, and then we can break down some of the voting races. First. Yeah.
All right. So which one do we want to start with? Is there anyone in particular? I mean, we touched on a couple of the other ones already. Like, we've known about the other ones.
Just to clarify, what went up this week? The Vezina, the Calder, the Hart.
It was the Hart, the Norris, the Vezina, the Ted Lindsay Award, which is voted on by the NHLPA, right. And then the Calder.
Okay. Let's start with the Calder.
That was the first one they announced. That sounds like a great idea. I wasn't surprised. I think that was my preseason pick. It was Cale Makar. So
yeah, it's one of those things. Cale Makar had an unreal, insane, white hot first half of the season. Quinn Hughes kind of did that in the second half of the season. I think if the season goes 12 more games and it goes to 82, Quinn might overtake him. But as it sits, Cale Makar just did too much, and I mean, he deserved it for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I find it hard to argue with a lot in this. I mean, I have some of the numbers up in front of me,
right?
Like the voting numbers, and there was the one little surprise to me, and it's not that they're included; it's just kind of the ranking of it, because I thought that more people would have hopped on this train a little bit more than others did. So Adam Fox came in fourth. So we knew who the three finalists were. By the way, we should say that. So it was Makar, it was Hughes, and Dominik Kubalik was third.
Kubalik was going to be third, right?
Okay, and a distant third because of the fact, like, literally, he didn't even get a first place vote.
Yeah, that's tough.
As a matter of fact, there were one first place vote went to somebody who was not a finalist.
Okay.
That's it. And I will surprise you with who the vote went to in a moment. But Kubalik didn't get many second place votes either. He only got two. So it was pretty clear that people were either voting Makar or Hughes as 1-2, and the rest kind of went down the line. So the guy who finished in fourth, who also, by the way, got the other first place vote, was Adam Fox for the Rangers.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't have a problem with that. He played a great season.
I don't have a problem with that. I was surprised that he finished ahead of the guy who finished fifth, who I thought the noise around would give him a little bit more of a push.
Yeah.
Fifth was Elvis Merzlikins.
Okay. That's
and
fair.
That was a little bit of a surprise. That's about it. I mean, other than that, like, every other name that's on the list below it who got some voting, Mackenzie Blackwood finished sixth. That was, you know, he played a lot this year for Jersey.
Who
was good.
Okay, whatever voter.
Yes.
For Mackenzie Blackwood in second place over Makar or Hughes.
Yeah.
Vote removed. Goodbye.
Well, could you say the same for whoever voted Merzlikins second?
Yes.
I mean, like, honestly, who voted?
Yeah, the top two should be Makar Hughes, clean.
Okay, well, guess what? Take a closer look at the top two again and realize that Makar didn't get a third, fourth, or fifth place vote.
No.
So, obviously, whoever it was who put Fox and Merzlikins and Blackwood in second obviously voted for Quinn Hughes in third.
Right. He was one of the six voting for Hughes in third. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But
yeah,
that guy, no, get out of here. Stop it.
I mean, and here's the thing, because everybody else beyond that point who didn't, like, because where the top two were very clearly something else.
Yeah.
Like, Olofsson in that spot, Olofsson had a really good start to his year, so I could see people saying, yeah, you know what, you're third,
right,
maybe fourth. Like, you know, I can see that. Marino was good at times. You know, Suzuki, I think Suzuki's more bigger thing was the playoffs. Right. Like, if playoffs factored into it, Suzuki would have probably been, like, a sixth place finisher in this, like, thing or something like that. But it doesn't, and same thing, you know, if you can hold, you can say the same thing that I just said about Suzuki with Gurianov too. Like,
yeah.
Gurianov would have gotten way more votes if you factor in playoffs, but 100%. You don't, you know, right. So it is what it is. Where are we going next?
Let's talk about the Vezina real quick.
And yeah, I mean, the Ted Lindsay, by the way, doesn't really have a voting tally.
We're going to tack up the Ted Lindsay with the heart because it's the same guy.
Well, and not only that, but I was going to say there's not really a vote tally. It's just the players voted on it.
Players voted, and they don't expose those ballots.
No, and not only that, but it's like we know. Okay, so we're doing the Vezina next.
Yeah, we'll do the Vezina next, and that was Connor Hellebuyck of the Winnipeg Jets.
I think the voting on this was actually relatively fair for the most part because, like, as I look at it, first of all, Hellebuyck won, which I thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
He wasn't my preseason pick, but I think that he
earned the hell out of it.
He definitely earned it.
He was the only reason the Winnipeg Jets were relevant this year.
But I do respect, like, I know, I look at the first place votes and I go, all right, you know what? His, you know, Tuukka Rask getting 10 is not a problem to me. Like,
even Andre Vasilevsky getting one is not a problem.
No, actually, anybody who you voted for that, like among the finalists, I think was fine. Very clearly, people thought Rask and Hellebuyck had better years than Vasilevsky, and I think that's fair. You know, it's not going to be that way all the time.
When's the last time a player received Vezina votes in a year where they got traded? Because Robin Lehner received a second place vote and finished in sixth in voting.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
When's the last
one?
Time that happened?
That's an interesting one. Very pleasantly surprised to see Markstrom in fourth because I think we all agreed he had had a really good year.
He had a spectacular
year. Deserved to be in the running possibly, so that was good.
I understood why he wasn't a finalist, obviously.
Sure, I did too. Exactly.
Evidenced by these votes. But I was a little disappointed because I think Jacob Markstrom had a phenomenal season.
Yeah, and then, I mean, again, Merzlikins getting some of the pull there is probably from just how – you know, I mean, if you almost single-handedly will your team to the playoffs, then you might as well get some credit. Yeah,
it's about the story as much as the performance.
I mean, so I'll say this, because the other three I'm looking at who got votes for seventh place, I thought Kemper would have gotten more.
I agree.
Like, that's the only difference. Like, the other ones, I go, all right, you're throwing your third place vote out there. It makes some sense, but
I think Antti Raanta is too good, and I think Darcy Kemper loses a little bit of sting because his backup is too good.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, it's that. Well, yeah, but the other guy is, like, pretty good, too. So, like,
all right. Okay. But, let's have some fun. Here comes the crazy ballots sometimes.
Let's go with Yossi winning the Norris Trophy.
I don't have a problem with it, to be honest. I thought Yossi had really, brought himself to the top of that conversation later in the year.
I agree with you. Like I said, I probably would have voted for John Carlson.
That's who I thought was going to win it too.
Just
because
the first 25 games, he was unreal. He was otherworldly for the first at least quarter of the season, and was then very good. Like he wasn't bad after that. He just kind of he quote unquote regressed back to being his all-star self. Like it's he was still just a very good defenseman. Are there any names here that stick out for you? Because I'm looking at this ballot.
Okay, so. I don't, to be honest with you, first of all, I don't have a problem with the top five. And even down to Slavin was really underrated this year in a year where he wasn't going to join that conversation among the top three that I think that he earned that. Shea Theodore was a really strong defenseman for Vegas. I don't have a problem with that.
You talk about Elvis Merzlikins getting a lot of love and the Vezina love. I'm surprised Werenski is not higher.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm not saying he deserved to be a finalist, but I might have slipped him maybe above Shea Theodore.
Okay.
Just in terms of
– I think Werenski could have definitely finished above – yeah. He could have definitely finished above Hamilton.
And
I think he
loses some points because if you look down to number 14, Seth Jones is right there. And it's, you know, you get that straw that stirs the drink discussion, you know.
What people want to find is a team that has one guy who's really good at it. And then a bunch of other guys that you go, they don't even get votes. And Columbus is a tough one with that. I think Carolina is too, to an extent. I'm surprised Carolina had two in the top 10 like that. Because that was – and maybe that's why they had two in the top 10.
It's hard to stand out.
Because with those two, you're going, which one was more important? Was Slavin more important or was Hamilton more important? Hamilton got hurt.
Hamilton missed a lot of time.
That's the other thing too. He missed time, so he had a really good year.
I'm curious if Jacob Slavin would be as high on this list if Dougie Hamilton doesn't miss time. Or does Dougie Hamilton – just vacuum all the votes because he was the one getting all the attention.
Right. I mean, it's a tough call. I thought McAvoy's a little high for me. Yeah. I mean, it's tough to say that someone's too high because like this is literally throwaway votes.
We're talking about eight votes. Eight people put Charlie McAvoy on their ballot out of a lot.
The only thing I'll disagree with on that then is that I don't know how, and I'm looking at a couple of different ones here. I don't know how you sit there and think that collectively, and maybe you have an argument for Petrangelo and Slavin a little bit, but I don't know how you look and say Shea Theodore, Dougie Hamilton, Charlie McAvoy, Esa Lindell. They're the four guys I think I can see that got at least one top three vote, either a second or a third place right. vote. And I'm going, I don't know how you can sit there and think that those guys were better than the top three.
Right. Like, you know, Petrangelo, in any way. I see it. I see Petrangelo having a discussion to get in the top three. I see Slavin having a bit of a discussion to get into the top three.
Right. After and Slavin's was, and Slavin's wasn't as bad. Like, right. you know, like Slavin got six votes that were top three votes and then the rest were fourth and fifth.
Right.
I get like, that.
You put Charlie McAvoy, who you put Esa Lindell third. Come on.
Right. Who like Come whoever on. Put and Esa Lindell finished third because he got one vote or finished 11th in right. this total thing because he got one third place vote.
Although I would like to point out that Ivan Provorov got 2 5th place votes and finished 17th in the voting. I would just like to point that out.
And I think that's, you know, in all honesty, I think that's fair to an extent because it's like, I don't think he was anywhere near the best and it's hard to out. Like when you ask people, pick your top five defensemen for the year. Then squeezing Ivan Provorov onto your ballot, probably with Josi, Carlson, and Hedman already on there, then I think that that's fair enough that you sit there and go, okay, two people found room to squeeze him into the ballot.
Right.
Exactly. Like.
Also, I would like to just shout out whatever Minnesota beat writer put Jonas Brodin on their ballot. Bless your heart, buddy. Bless your heart. He had a decent season, but he's not a Norris. Come on.
No, Spurgeon, I respect. Like, I think Spurgeon's fine.
Spurgeon, I get it. Fifth. But Krug Jonas Brodin.
Fifth, I get.
Jonas Brodin, come on, man. Did he give you a good scoop? Is he your source? Come on. all right, so that's the Norris. Congratulations to Roman Josi. So
let's go to the heart.
Somehow, the guy who won the most valuable player in the world plays for the Edmonton Oilers, but isn't Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Can Somehow. Someone please read the definition of valuable to me? Most valuable, please? But that's neither here nor there. For the record, I do not have a problem with Leon Draisaitl winning the Ted Lindsay.
Yeah, well, if nothing
because,
else, too, the thing.
Because that is most outstanding player. Sure, cool. You can give that to whoever you want. Mm-hmm. Most valuable? Come on. Connor? Come on.
Well, here's my defense of Draisaitl for this particular year anyway, and that's that McDavid missed time at a couple different points.
I get it.
And if they don't miss a beat during it because Draisaitl was that good, you know, then I get it. They are very much a product of one another. Like their point totals are very much a product right. of one another, which, you know, we talked about a little bit. Like I honestly didn't, I expected Draisaitl to win it, to be honest. It wouldn't, obviously, I don't think he would have been my preseason pick. I am very disappointed with a couple of things on this list.
Okay.
One down the line, and one is down the line. Like I said, I thought
Draisaitl was Connor McDavid finished fifth and got a first place vote is hilarious to me.
Yeah, that is kind of funny. Let me see if there's anything I'm not disappointed with first. I think I'm not disappointed with the fact that Hellebuck finished sixth and got three first place votes.
No, I appreciate that.
I very much appreciate someone recognizing how valuable he was to Winnipeg being even remotely close to successful this year.
More important than that, I like voters recognizing that you can vote for someone who's not a center.
Sure, absolutely. Well, and then, then in that vein, I like that Roman Josi's up there too.
Right.
You know, that absolutely.
Who is the last defenseman to finish as a finalist in the Hart Trophy voting? It's been a while. I can't tell you. It might be Chris Pronger. It might be like that era of guys.
Yeah. I can go, where's the, hang on a minute. Here's the list of past Hart winners so I can pull that up really quick.
Okay.
And just
see. Yeah. I'm curious who the last.
Oh, hold on, man. And they list the runners up too. So this is perfect. Oh,
beautiful.
So you said the last time they.
The last defenseman who was a Hart finalist.
Okay. You went last defenseman, but let me do something else for you here because.
Defenseman or goalie.
I was going to say four years ago in 16-17, Bobrovsky was a finalist. McDavid won it, but Bobrovsky was a finalist.
Okay.
14-15.
And honestly, I don't have a problem with it because Bobrovsky was absurd that year.
Right. 14-15, Carey Price won it.
Okay.
Over Ovechkin.
Yeah, that's the year he won all the trophies. Yeah. He cleaned up that year.
11-12, Lundqvist was a finalist.
Okay.
So
it's been at least a decade for a defenseman.
How about this year? Hold on a minute. So 06-07.
So Sidney two years post-lockout?
Yeah. Sidney Crosby won the Hart.
Yeah.
The other two finalists were Roberto Luongo and Marty Brodeur.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Okay, here's how bad this is getting at this point, okay? Because I found two goalies who have won the Hart Trophy.
More recently than a defenseman.
More recently than a defenseman has been a finalist. You nailed it. Chris Pronger in 99-2000 was the last defenseman.
Chris Pronger.
That was a finalist.
That's a finalist.
Like, I'm looking down the list. I'm going, okay, so Drysdale, MacKinnon, Panarin this year.
Right.
Kucherov, Crosby, McDavid. Nope. Hall, MacKinnon, Kopitar.
Nope.
I mentioned Bobrovsky a couple of years ago, but it was McDavid, Crosby, Kane, Crosby, Ben, Price, Ovechkin, Tavares, Crosby.
Well, it was Jordy Ben, right?
You know? No, yeah, right?
He definitely got a heart down, totally.
Yeah. Crosby, Getzlaf, Giroux, Ovechkin, Crosby, Tavares, Malkin, Stamkos, Lundqvist, Perry, Daniel, Sedin,
center, goalie. Right.
Then that year it was Daniel, Sedin, Henrik, Sedin, Ovechkin, Crosby. Ovechkin, Malkin, Datsyuk. Ovechkin, Malkin, Iginla. You know, like, go through the list. Oh, and then first year post lockout, Thornton, Jágr, Kiprusoff.
Yep.
Like, a lot of goalies get nominated.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of goalies get nominated, but there has legitimately not been a defenseman who has been nominated as a finalist for the Hart Trophy since Chris Pronger won it in 2000.
20 plus years.
As I'm going through, like, I'm doing it again as I'm going through. There's not a defenseman on this list.
Are you going back to Bork?
Yep. That's the next finalist in 1990. In 30 years, two defensemen have been a finalist for the Hart Trophy.
I don't know how that happened. I don't know how that happened. Because you look at the Norris Trophy, and the Norris Trophy isn't even an award for being a good defenseman. It's an award for being a forward.
Do you know who the last defenseman is beyond Pronger and Bork? Bork multiple times, but the last defenseman actually nominated for the Hart Trophy.
Bobby Orr. Okay.
Because it wasn't that far back.
Okay. Who is it?
Mark Howe.
Wow.
Seriously, okay. Mark Howe in 1986. Actually, believe it or not, I found another Flyer who was a finalist in a year. Now, remember that anybody who was a nominee in that year, who was a finalist or was runner-up based on voting or whatever, because I don't think they played it up that much. Like, hey, we got three finalists, and these are the guys who are going to win it. You know what I mean? But just know that everybody who was in the running those years had to compete against Wayne Gretzky, winning it.
Oh yeah, good luck.
In a row.
Yeah. That's,
so it was probably not happening. No. But 1985. Wayne Gretzky won it, and the two finalists, both unfortunately not with us anymore, Pelle Lindbergh and Dale Hawerchuk.
Wow.
And then the next year.
Dale Hawerchuk, Flyers legend.
Well, and then the next year, when I said Mark Howe was a finalist in 86, or one of the top two runner-ups, you know, runners-up, Gretzky won it. And Mark Howe finished behind Mario Lemieux. So imagine being the third place guy behind those two.
Imagine being the third guy on that podium. You look up and there's Mario. You look up and there's Wayne, and you're like, oh, I'm here too.
Yeah.
I'm just as good as these guys, see?
So I don't have like a problem with seeing guys get recognized like that. And actually, quite honestly, I even go down to eighth on the list and I go, Jack Eichel probably could have gotten a little bit more love because I look for a guy who I know doesn't have help as much.
Yeah, and he's like, none.
Like Hellebuck really had to carry Winnipeg, and Roman Josi is probably the best player on Nashville at this point, and Jack Eichel is definitely the best player on Buffalo at this point.
What are you talking about? Buffalo is a competitor. They added Wayne Simmonds at the deadline. What are you talking about? What do you mean he doesn't have any help? They added Wayne Simmonds. Come on.
Well, I don't know. I color me surprised that Wayne Simmonds didn't boost them that much further.
Right.
You know,
especially when they were already bad to begin with. All right. So we're.
There's a couple. And like, who gave Tristan Jarry a Hart vote?
Probably the same guy who gave him a Vezina vote.
I mean,
I'd be willing to bet.
But JT Miller's an interesting one. Like Markstrom's more of an MVP to me. For Vancouver than JT Miller is.
I agree. And I think Quinn Hughes is probably a bigger MVP than either of them.
Well, even Pedersen, who got 3 5th place votes, makes more sense to me than JT Miller does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, get Pedersen.
I mean, like, honestly, I understand Patrick Kane getting a 5th place vote. I really understand that.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, I understand Ovechkin coming into the conversation with Washington. The only Tampa Bay guy I see on this list is Kucherov, and I understand that one even.
Stamkos, yeah. Stamkos missed all that
Stamkos
time.
But I understand it. In terms of
Victor Hedman probably should be on that list, but as we determined earlier, defensemen don't get nominated for the Hart.
Yeah, the defensemen don't even get votes, apparently, because Yossi got a few votes, John Carlson got a few, and that was it.
You know, and it took John Carlson putting up 50 points in the first 40 games of the season to get himself that. You know what I mean? Like, it's – well, Ivan Provorov for Hart 2021.
So the other thing – okay, so the other thing that I don't love about this, and I don't want to take – like, we knew about this for a while. I'm surprised that Pastrnak wasn't closer to third.
I'm surprised that Pastrnak and Marchand are, what, fourth and seventh or something like that?
Fourth and ninth.
Yeah, they're both in the top 10. You know, we talk about Connor McDavid getting a first-place vote at number five. If your line mate is also on this list, I'm sorry, you're not the most valuable. But that's just me.
But I was surprised because I thought Pastrnak was probably the best guy on that team.
I agree.
And – I was surprised that he didn't get more love. I understand why Panarin gets a lot of love. It's just – it surprised me that it wasn't closer. Like, the separation between Panarin got 24 first-place votes and then Pastrnak got three.
Right.
Like, what? You know, like, that makes no sense to me
I wonder if Marchand being there split the vote at all among Boston voters.
I don't think it could be that much, though, because Marchand only got six votes total.
That's fair.
You know, like – it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So,
well, listen, it's the NHL. Since when does it make sense?
I guess.
Speaking of things that don't make sense, the draft is next week. And I think we should circle our way out of here and set up our little draft preview for next week.
Yeah.
We're on our way out. We'll be back next week. The episode will drop at about 8 o'clock next week, as usual, depending on,
next week you'll have 2 days for the draft.
You'll have a couple days to prep for the draft, listen to the podcast, get yourself ready to go. And, you know, we might not share all our secrets, but we'll share most of them. And you can find the rest of our secrets on Twitter at YWT Podcast. Make sure to follow Kevin over there at Kevin_Durso. The show can be found anywhere, iTunes, Facebook, Podbean, Instagram, YouTube, wherever. We can also be found on sportstalkphilly.com. They're on Twitter at sportstalkphl and at Flyerdelphia. So until then, Kevin, anything else? Or
one more thing that I will say before we sign off, because we'll circle back with the rest of the Stanley Cup final too. And the thought that I was having, you know, and I kind of didn't want to have the conversation today, because, and I'm glad we're not, because it's not over yet, but we're getting at least one more game, maybe two.
Yep.
And I don't know when like I said before, we don't know when it's coming back. We don't know what it's going to look like when it comes back. And no matter what, though, I think that the NHL has done a great job to this point of putting this on. They're going to obviously now, like we kept teasing it as a, well, you know, they keep getting nothing, so they're going to get to the finish line, right? But they're there. There's two games left. Fine. They're going to get to the finish line. Someone is getting the Stanley Cup from Gary Bettman.
If something happens now, you know, it would be a catastrophic shock.
Yeah. Someone's getting the Stanley Cup from Gary Bettman, whether it's Monday or Wednesday, it doesn't matter. Yep. Definitely appreciate these last couple of games just for that. You know, like appreciate what they've done to pull this off and, you know, knowing that someone's going to win the Stanley Cup this year. Right. And hopefully, you know, my hope is that we don't have to worry too much about the what happens next part from here. Right. You know, like, and I say that meaning there's going to be discussions. There's going to be things that have to be worked out. But I think that that stuff will start to happen a lot faster. Right now, all we know is that they're opening up the training facilities for teams in mid-October.
Trying to get through it.
But I think it's worth, you know, there's definitely part of me that was like, you know, you don't want to see it end because of the fact that, you know, it's the last live hockey game you're going to watch for a little while.
I was about to say, we don't know when the next season's going to start. I think we should all appreciate the last 120 or more minutes of hockey that we get this year.
Yeah. And I think that to an extent we're going to get heavily involved with the draft and free agency, and it's going to be an interesting off season with the flat cap and all that stuff. But to actually watch live hockey, you know, and I think to sit there, you know, those last couple of days, whether it's just the game six on Monday or if it's both of them, you know, and you get the best thing that could possibly happen in game seven in the Stanley Cup final, you know, on Wednesday night, then whatever it is, definitely enjoy it for what it is, because it's been a fun 2 months coming back and having stuff to talk about. And I think that one of the things I wanted to add about it from a Flyer standpoint was that, you know, sure, we were all disappointed two weeks ago when we did the show and it was over. And, you know, I had thought about them because I thought about it in light of two different things. One being the way the Sixers season went, when they came back, and one being the way that some other teams in the NHL had it. And, you know, both like the Sixers, I think, had played a total of, they finished out that regular season and they got swept in the playoffs. So they played 12 games and it wasn't very fun right. for a lot of people. Like I saw, and I thought about like the New York Rangers, and I get it. The Rangers kind of won a different prize because they got Lafreniere
right.
more than likely, but the Rangers came back from this whole pause. You paused for 4.5 months to come back to play one exhibition game that you lost and three playoff games that you lost.
Right.
And it was over. And it was over. I mean, they played that exhibition game, I think, the last day that the exhibitions were happening. So it was Thursday.
Right.
And then they opened a series, a qualifying round series that's a best of five on Saturday. And by the following Tuesday, we're going home. Yep. And it was over within a week. To get an extra month where you sat there and you went, you know what? Because the Flyers gave us 13 legitimate playoff games and three round robin games. And with the exhibition, another one. So to get 17 more games in a month, pretty
awesome.
Pretty excellent. You know, it's awesome. Just great to see it happen. And we had a lot of stuff to actually talk about because of it. And in the month since, we've had a lot of stuff to talk about too, because
sure.
it's been a good Stanley Cup final. It's been a really good Stanley Cup final. And that's the great thing about it. So, you know, whether it ends on Monday or whether it ends on Wednesday, I hope everybody's enjoyed it because it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And we're two games away from the end of the season, and we'll be back next week to talk about a Stanley Cup champion. And that's crazy.
Yep.
So, until next week, we'll see you guys later.